Disruption Zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
All right, excited about our next guest on the Disruption Zone. Hey, for those of you who are looking for a third option in the presidential race, or maybe you're just interested in the lay of the land, or maybe you just want to hear an outside point of view, or maybe you just want to hear somebody that you want to be mad at. Fine. I want to welcome to the program Dr. Jo Jorgensen. She's a senior lecturer at psychology at Clemson University. She's a PhD in industrial and organizational psychology. And she is the libertarian candidate for president of the United States. Folks, she is the only woman running in the race. So we could have our first female president, and she'd be a Republican. So there, or excuse me, she would be a libertarian, not a Republican. Very much not a Republican. She'd be a libertarian. So anyway, I was excited to talk to her. I'm not a libertarian. I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. I'm an independent who leans libertarian and tends to vote Republican or libertarian is pretty much how you would line me up. I am a member of the Don't Tread on Me party. Okay. So smaller government, lower taxes. That's pretty much smaller government, lower taxes, gun freedom. Other than that, I don't care what you do. Okay. Just let me live my life. You live yours. Don't mess with my freedom. Don't get in my way. Okay. So anyway, I thought this would be really interesting. So without any further ado, Dr. Jo Jorgensen on the line with us on the Disruption Zone. I understand you're calling from like an airplane or something. You're on your way between Texas cities. Is that right?
Well, actually, no. We're still on the. Well, for the first week, we traveled by bus alone.
Okay.
And two nights was the first night that we did travel by plane. But no, we're getting on the bus here in about an hour and a half and heading to Dallas on the bus. But, and I saw that they allowed extra time in case of bad bus reception, but I'm actually here in the hotel and I'll be back in my room in just a minute, but I thought I'd give the introductions as I was walking to my room. But
yeah, no, we're gonna have... sounds fantastic, actually. We've got a really good signal, so I think that will work. Now, you are an academic, you've been a professor.
Well, actually, let me correct you only because my boss wouldn't be very happy.
Ah, okay.
I'm actually a senior lecturer.
Okay.
But students don't know the difference.
I got you. No, but well, let's get it right. But as a lecturer, as somebody who's been in the academic world, have you ever been on a bus tour like this before?
Oh, never. In fact, it's funny. My husband's a musician and he has gone on tour, but it was in a van. And so I told him that kind of ironic that I'm the first one to get a bus tour, not him.
What is that like? What's it like living on a bus for a little while?
Well, I actually kind of like it compared to flying to different cities. In fact, I've told people that it's similar to what it's like is it's like the audiences are brought to me.
Right.
That when we arrive in the city, they open the doors and I talk to an audience. We get back on the bus, go to the next city, a few hours later, open the doors, new audience. So it's almost like the audiences are being brought to me instead of me flying around. So it's actually kind of nice.
Yeah. I'm with you. I'd rather drive anyway. You can look out the windows and see because we have this great country, you know, and I have a goal to get in all 50 states. I've been in about 42 of them. And there's something about driving or riding or just looking out the window and seeing how the country changes and how the culture's different in all the different areas of it. To me, that just, you get a little more in touch with it, you know?
Yes, and the food and the people, absolutely.
Speaking of which, you lecture at Clemson University. So South Carolina barbecue or Texas barbecue? Because I know you're visiting Texas today.
Actually, okay, I hate to lose the majority of the voters here, but neither, because I haven't eaten red meat in over 20 years.
Oh, no! No barbecue. Wait, couldn't we barbecue some Brussels sprouts or something?
Perhaps. I would eat barbecued Brussels sprouts.
So let's dive into why you're running for president on the libertarian ticket. And just, you know, full disclosure, I am not a Republican. I am not a Democrat. I am not a Libertarian. I am an independent who has been a longtime Republican voter that leans Libertarian, right? So generally, if there is a Libertarian-leaning Republican in a race, I vote for them. I have voted for Libertarians in the past. This last year has probably made me more Libertarian than I have ever been in my life. But why did you decide to run for president on the Libertarian ticket? Why do this to yourself? Because of the way politics are today. I mean, you had to skip an event the other day, and you were very honest about what happened, and you have a good sense of humor about it. But the media sort of jumped all over for you for that and said, oh, look at the crazy Libertarian, thinks she's not Batman. You know, and like just the way that that got taken out of context, why do this to yourself?
Well, because government is too big, too bossy, too nosy, too intrusive. But the worst part of all is that they usually end up hurting the very people that they try to help. And I got to tell you, you are exactly the voter we're trying to reach out to. Because a lot of people ask us, well, do you draw more from the left or the right? Actually, we draw from independents or people who have never voted, people who realize that government just isn't working and we need something else.
I want to dive into your platform, but let me go through some of the devil's advocate arguments a little bit here. People will say you're just a ticket splitter or somebody who will end up giving the presidency to people who will build bigger government because the vast majority of people who vote Libertarian do at least lean to the right on fiscal issues, which means they would otherwise probably vote Republican. How do you answer that?
Yeah. Well, to answer the first part of the question, what if I split the ticket so that we end up with a guy who gives us bigger government? You mean Trump? You mean the guy who's increased deficits year after year after year, even though he told us he'd make the deficit smaller? Or you mean Trump, the guy who's increased spending, the guy who said that he was the businessman who knew how to balance the budget? And I got to tell you, I completely understand why people voted for Trump. In fact, I was one of the ones who was telling everybody, hey, this guy's going to win, because you could just feel it. You could see all the Trump yard signs. There were no Hillary yard signs out in, you know, what we call the flyover states, and that people were just fed up with government. And they wanted somebody who was an outsider, somebody without 50 years of baggage, political baggage, favors to repay, you know, getting to mayor, U.S. Senate, whatever. And he looked like the guy. And if even Trump can't balance a budget, if even Trump can't decrease spending, then I hope people realize there is just absolutely no hope for any Republican politician decreasing the budget. In fact, when I ran for the VP slot in 1996, and I was on the ballot in all 50 states in 96, by the way, as the VP, that was my stump speech, was about how Republican politicians were not giving the many fine Republican voters what they were asking for. And it's even more so now.
I blame Republicans for the fact that the free market is under such attack right now, because there has been lip service to lower taxes and smaller government. But in fact, you know, we have essentially two choices, more cronyism on one side and more socialism on the other. And I hate to break it down into such base accusations, because I think the vast majority of Americans' political positions are much more nuanced than that. But the problem is, and I'd love your comments on this, but I just feel like that Republicans have given lip service to small government, while exactly what you said, allowing the same type of spending, because they're afraid to say, look, we want to cut taxes and let you keep more of your money, but in doing so, that means you'll be responsible for more areas of your life, which means we can't spend as much as we do propping that up. And there seems to be a failure to understand that concept.
Yes, I actually had a conversation with Ron Paul many years ago, and he said that he was on a committee once with fellow Republicans, and they wanted to increase spending. And Ron said, no, we're Republicans. That's not what we're supposed to do. We need to make government smaller. And their honest to God answer was, but if we don't increase spending here, then they're not going to vote us back into office. And then what good will we be? It was like, well, what good are you now? You're right. Going to make government bigger.
Right. Yeah, I think for me, I've when you look back over it, one of the issues that I – and I voted for Trump in 2016 – mm-hmm. One of the issues that I've had with him since, I think he did some good things. He cut taxes, you know, for most people, not all people, but he did cut taxes. He did something that was long overdue that I think was probably the best move that any president could have made, and that was the slashing of the corporate tax to nearly in half. And I have to give him kudos for that. But he's given voice to the fact he does not care about the deficit. He literally doesn't think it's an important thing. And I don't think people recognize, here's the problem. As long for right now, it's fine because we're the world's currency, right? So people want to buy us up no matter how much we print. But at some point, people are going to go, wait a minute, there's nothing backing this. They're going to switch currencies. And when they do, it's going to make the Great Depression look like a walk in the park.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're already headed down that. I don't understand why people don't see that this is a huge issue, because I was talking about it back in the 90s, and it's only gotten worse. We're like five or six times what we were in the 90s, and I was trying to sound the alarm bells back then, but Republican politicians just aren't listening. But the many fine Republican voters do understand that.
Let's hope so. All right, let's dive into a little bit of your platform. First of all, I want to talk gun rights. Because I work in the firearms industry, we have noticed an enormous influx of new gun owners. And guess what? A lot of them are Democrats. A lot of them are people who 3 or 5 months ago said, we need to take those guns away. And now they're going, hey, how do we get a gun? And they're standing in line outside gun stores and they're waiting for their background checks, which they thought you didn't have to get. And it's kind of interesting and fun, but... But the point is, I don't care. I want anybody and everybody. I don't care what your color, what your creed, what your background. I don't care. I want you to have an understanding of how to use it safely. But I want everyone to express their Second Amendment right, to have that Second Amendment right and to have it protected. Where are you on gun rights?
I'd like to see every gun law that was enacted in the last 100 years go away. Because, again, the criminals... they're not the ones getting the background checks. They're not filling out paperwork. So why should we be the ones doing that? And there have been many documented cases in which women in particular were waiting on the background check to come through. And in the meantime, her boyfriend, husband, whoever, killed her. So why should law-abiding citizens have to fill out paperwork when we know the criminals aren't? I mean, if you're going to commit murder, do you think you're going to, you know, care about a form?
I actually agree with background checks, but that would probably be the only one of the laws in the last 100 years in terms of guns that I wouldn't repeal. Every other one I would, for the most part, because I always joke that I'm to the right of the NRA on firearms. Like if the government can have it, I can have it, you know. And it's funny when I hear the left when they say, well, you know, a musket was what they were talking about back then. And an AR-15 is not a musket. I'm like, damn straight, it's not a musket. But you know what? It's today's musket, because that's what the government carries. So I should be able to carry it as well. So it's a bottom line.
Exactly.
It is what it is there. What about let's talk taxes. Would you be for a fair tax, like a consumption only? How would you do taxation from the libertarian perspective?
Well, I don't think there is such a thing as a fair tax. What I think is fair is that you pay as you go. And if you want a service or a good, that you don't ask other people to pay for it.
So how would you set up government income?
Well, first of all, only about half of the revenue comes from the income tax. And we need to cut half of government anyway. Even if we had money sitting in the bank, we still need to make government much smaller, because it's in every aspect of our lives. And, you know, I use this as an example. A lot of people ask me, well, why do you think we're so polarized? Why do you think, you know, the country is the way it is? And I think part of it is that you have to go through government for everything. So, for instance, education. If you want prayer in your school and your neighbor doesn't, you've each got to, you know, fight it out. donate to different campaigns, put different yard signs out, go to the ballot and vote. One of you is going to win. One of you is going to lose. And then the loser has to go the way of the winner. Mm-hmm. And that's the way it is with education, healthcare, retirement, everything. But wouldn't it be great if we could each choose our own way and do the Milton Friedman way of voting with our dollars or voting with our feet, in which we get to pick what we want. And instead we have, for instance, a Department of Education in Washington that's trying to put out a one-size-fits-all, and the needs of rural Appalachia completely different than downtown Manhattan. Why shouldn't we let parents, teachers, and students at the local level make those decisions?
I've always said if I were president, I would get rid of the federal Department of Education. I would leave it
on
to the states.
On day one. Now, that's something the president cannot do.
Right.
However, what I would do is urge government to, or urge the Congress to defund it, or at least get spending down as little as possible.
Right.
But you know, that's something else about what the president can do versus Congress. We heard in the 80s how, Ronald Reagan, smaller government. Why can't we go back to the days of smaller government the way Ronald Reagan did it? But what a lot of people don't realize is that he made government bigger year after year after year, every year for 8 years. And the people who were close to him said, well, Congress never gave him a balanced budget, or they never gave him a smaller budget. Yeah, but he didn't fight back. He didn't say, no, take it back, sharpen your pencil, bring me another one. He just gladly signed each budget. So what I would do if they brought me a budget like that is I would say, take it back, work on it, then bring it back to me. Now, of course, after a few times, they could, they could veto me, they could overturn it. But I would at least try.
Right. Well, it feels like government is an entity all of its own. I mean, it's got its own survival instinct, you know, which is one
course.
Reason why starting new departments. I will get your thoughts on this. This is a side note, but yesterday I saw an article that the ACLU was wanting to disband the Department of Homeland Security. And reading through the article, I was like, I don't agree with all of their reasons, but I fully agree with the idea. Because
right.
I said it from the beginning, even when Bush put it in place, it was an overreaction to 9/11 along with the Patriot Act. And it was supposed to, the original idea behind the Homeland Security Department was actually a good one. It was, look, we have all these alphabet agencies, they're not talking to each other, and it's keeping us from acting on actionable intelligence. I'm like, well, the answer to that is to tell people, talk to each other. You're their boss, president. Talk to
right.
each other. And instead of creating, how in the world could we possibly think that adding a new bureaucracy will help the old bureaucracies work together? I mean, I'm totally cool with that. Are you up with that idea of disbanding the Homeland Security Department?
Oh, and a few others while I'm at it. And yeah, let me point out, you were talking about, you know, government being self-serving, kind of its own entity. You think about the kind of people who want to go into government, those are the people who want power. And so they're the ones who, once in office, they just keep grabbing more of it. And the Libertarian Party is the only party saying, no, we need to stop this. And, you know, people ask me, well, what's the Libertarian Party? And I tell them the Libertarian Party is on your side, not the side of special interest lobbyists and bureaucrats in Washington.
All right. As a nation, I think culturally we've pretty much decided that we're okay with at least some level of safety net. What we haven't decided is how big that should be. It tends to continue to grow and grow and grow.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you come down on sort of a basic structural, okay, at this point, you know, maybe temporary, something like that, some sort of a safety net, while, you know, but beyond that level, are you every man for himself here? Or is there an element where there's a level of kindness and compassion for people who literally cannot help themselves?
Well, I would suggest that the government is every man for himself, going out there voting funds for their districts and getting lobbyists to put money in their accounts. And I would say that the government is the least compassionate way to get help. So, first of all, let me say, of course, we can't yank the rug out from underneath people. And that's part of the reason that I got the nomination as opposed to some of the others who were running for the Libertarian nomination, who did have a let's say a faster a switchover. I think that we need to have a transition. And in fact, what I would do in healthcare, and we can talk about healthcare later, but what I would do is I would actually put funds into the accounts of veterans so that they could spend the money as opposed to giving them a monopoly that doesn't work. But let me give you, here's what I want to head towards.
Let me pause you right there, because I think what you just said literally fixes the VA crisis, because I've been talking about this for a while. Why can't veterans choose where they get their health care? Why do they have to? In some cases, you mentioned Appalachia. In some cases, people are having to drive from Appalachia 2-3 hours for an appointment.
Oh, exactly.
It's absurd when the doctor that could help them is right there in their community.
Right. And then they drive and then they're told, well, no, you got to go to this guy. I heard of some veteran who had to drive to like 3 or 4 different places and then ended up back at the first place. He was given, and, you know, these are people who are willing to risk their lives. But right. No, if you look at the state of Indiana actually puts dollars into the state employees' accounts and they get to spend the money how they want.
Brilliant.
And what we saw in the state of Indiana is before the system was implemented, and by the way, this was voluntary, but pretty quickly everybody jumped, well, not everybody, but the majority jumped on board pretty quickly because they saw what a great system this was. But originally, only about 10% of the drugs purchased were generic, which you would expect. You know,
right.
You never spend somebody else's money as well as you spend your own. Why not get the expensive stuff? Within just a year or two, something like 90% of the drugs were generic. And here's the good part. The people were happy to do it because they got to keep the savings. And
right.
That's the way it should be.
Right.
But do you mind if I go back?
No, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just wanted to highlight that point. So go ahead.
Yeah, no, I interrupted myself, and I'd love to go back to healthcare, but I just want to really get this idea of charity since you asked me about it. You know, my favorite example, back from the 90s, the CEO of the United Way spent something like $400,000 on artwork. And keep in mind, that'd be close to $1 million today with government-caused inflation. And the donations dried up. You know, the donors were like, no, we gave you this money to help those in need, to help the poor, to help unwed mothers or people out of a job or people with mental illness, whatever. We didn't give you this money for fancy artwork. And so the United Way had to work hard to get the trust back, to show that they were putting the money where it belongs. Now imagine that same money going to the government. If the government has high overhead costs, there's nothing you can do about it. There's no accountability. They
right.
simply raise taxes and we give them more money. And research has shown that it is much more efficient and takes much less money to get a dollar from those who are giving it to those who are in need through the charity route as opposed to the government. And even, you know, we hear Bill Gates saying, you know, I want government to tax me more. I want, you know, we need to have more taxes. And yet he has the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Well, if he thinks government does such a good job of spending our money, how come he doesn't give that money to the federal government? How
right.
come he doesn't just say, okay, we'll just give our money to, because you can do it, you know?
Right.
So he must think that he can do a better job with that money than the government, or he wouldn't be hanging on to it. He'd be turning it over to a federal government program.
Well, that's a good point, because, you know, Bill Gates has done a lot of things. We can argue over whether they ended up being good or not, but he's done a lot of things with his money that has fallen under the umbrella of charity. And he probably does those things because he can control them. You know, he's passionate about vaccines, and so he's spending an enormous amount of money on vaccines. He can control
that. Yeah, exactly. And Oprah Winfrey with her School for Girls.
Yeah.
Again, she didn't just simply write an extra check to the IRS, which, you know, all these rich people who say, I wish the government would tax me more. Well, they can write a check to the IRS. The Treasury will gladly take their money.
Right.
But so, you know, why are they doing private charity on their own? And
and
by the way, I'm sure part of it, and I don't want to be too cynical. You know, maybe part of it is a little bit of PR, but, you know, we do feel good when we help others, and the government is robbing us of that. Now we've got such a gave it the office mentality.
Yeah. How do you think Oprah felt the day she said, you get a car and you get a car and you get a car? The government said, you get a car, you get a car and you get a car. The government's like, go buy a bicycle.
Right. Yeah. And then we're going to tax you by taking the front wheel. Exactly. Yeah. No, I mean, I bet you Oprah felt much better giving away those cars than she felt the first day she got her very first car. I bet you anything.
Yeah, that's a great point. OK, you wanted to talk healthcare, but I know we're running out of time here, but I also wanted to talk criminal justice reform, which is an area that I'm passionate about. So which do you want to tackle first?
Do you mind if we do health care?
Yeah, well, let's do it.
I'm
cool with that.
Okay, I just want to mention one additional thing.
Okay.
Which is that the biggest problem we have is that our insurance system is not actual insurance. That what if your car insurance, for instance, paid for gas, oil, and car change or car washes? You would never have any incentive to go around and look for the cheapest gas prices,
right.
Because you'd go around with your little copay card, you know, pay $5 and probably go to the nicest place. And the people who are providing services like gas stations, they have no reason to compete because they would be getting paid the big bucks by the insurance companies anyway. So, and you wouldn't even know that gasoline prices went up because they could just keep raising their prices to the insurance companies and you just pay your little copay card. But and that's the way it is in the healthcare system, by the way. So how come we're not paying for our own, you know, physical exams and the small expected things to where if we do go around and shop around, and if you look at the only two specialties that are somewhat free market because people spend their own money, it's LASIK surgery and cosmetic surgery. And we've seen prices go down dramatically and quality go up because people are spending their own money. So why can't we have competition in the rest of the healthcare field? And we keep hearing, oh, we need Medicare for all. Well, when I hear Medicare for all, what I think is VA hospital for all, it's not working in Great Britain. It's not working in Canada. How about we look at a country where the system is working? And that would be Singapore, which has more of a free market system.
I totally agree with that. I think the left is pushed. Their pushback will be, but poor people can't afford to pay for their physicals. And if they don't get a physical, then they will get a much worse, medical problem.
They can't pay for their physicals because the government has gotten involved. Over half the dollars go through government.
They cost $200 instead of $25. They'd be $25 and yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I wouldn't simply just stop the system we have now because the prices are too high.
Right.
Because thanks to the government, the prices have been bid up. So what I would do is I would put dollars in the, you know, just like the state of Indiana, I would put dollars in the pockets of veterans, dollars in the pockets of people getting Medicare, Medicaid, and let those people spend their dollars how they want,
yep,
and let them get the ball rolling for getting competition back.
I think that's great. And I put together like a 5-point plan on healthcare a while back, and I might steal that one for the 6th point. And you could steal any of these that you happen to agree
okay
with. But essentially, okay, I said, look, first of all, we have to have a price list so people can see what everything costs so that you can do those shopping. Secondly, I think you should be able to put money into an HSA tax-free no matter how much you put in there. It could be literally if you can afford to put your whole salary in because you live off something else, fine.
Yep.
It should be tax-free, and you should be able to put as much back for your own self as possible. It should roll over. It should always be there because then if you get to be the age of 50 and you've never had any health problems but you have a bad diagnosis but you got $500,000 that you've saved in your tax-free HSA, boom, that's much less strain on the insurance and it's much less strain on the government. I also think that we should be able to shop across state lines. If I can find a better eye care program in Indiana and a better regular program in Ohio, I should be able to purchase and put it all together. I also feel like that there should be tort reform. There should be a limit on the amount of money people can win in a court case. You should be able to get recompense if there's a bad mistake made, but it doesn't need to be, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars necessarily.
I am so sorry. The call failed for some reason.
No, that's okay. I'll just make a quick edit there. That's not a problem at all. So anyway,
okay,
just
continue with your list. I got the tort reform.
Yeah, tort reform was the last one that I gave. I think I missed the fifth one, but I'm definitely going to – what do you think of those three sort of as a starting point?
Well, I'm not sure about the tort reform. However, and I do agree that is a problem. I agree it's a problem. However, I hate to put any kind of caps on anything because usually those can be abused and then, you know, we kind of start the slippery slope.
Sure.
However, the other ones, they're a good start. I'd like to go even a step further in the beginning, like I said, putting money in people's accounts. But absolutely, with that money in those accounts, of course, shop across state lines.
Yeah.
Of course, be able to choose your provider. And that's part of the problem is we've got this this rigid structure where somehow you're assigned to a network and you have no choice. I mean, what if that happened buying cars or computers?
Right.
And, you know, the other thing I point out is, yeah, when you buy a car or a computer or even groceries, you shop for a good price and you get to keep the savings. And that's not what happens in healthcare. So the example you gave, the unlimited HSA where you have $500,000, yeah, guess what? You can shop around for the best price that you want for the catastrophic whatever, and you get to keep the leftover money and spend it how you want to.
I just think that people being encouraged to save to take care of themselves is part, because I love your idea of the putting the money in the accounts if you're already getting money, because it starts that ball rolling. I think people saving for themselves will also help that ball get rolling of driving that competition.
Yep.
If there's more people out there who are shopping for their own services, those service prices are going to go down. We only have a couple minutes here. I know you're very busy and you're about to take off, but I do want to let you chat just a little bit about criminal justice reform. Is that an important part of your platform? And what would you do in that area?
Well, it's always been important to libertarians. And what I would say is the most recent crisis that we have to fix is the federal government militarizing the local police department. That, as I mentioned, education should be at a local level. Same thing with crime. Assault, burglary, robbery, those are all local issues. And there's no reason why the federal government should be handing out tanks and grenade launchers to these cities. And, you know, we see how the cop cars, it says community to protect and serve, and they have such a nice attitude. Well, that attitude changes when now you've got a tank at your disposal. So once again, we got to get the federal government out of that so that things don't ramp up so quickly, so they don't escalate so quickly.
What about on the prison side? I mean, I think we imprison way too many people for nonviolent crimes.
Oh, that is just egregious. And I tell people, you know, my drug of choice is bourbon. What's the difference? Seriously. You know, people think just because it's legal, it's safe. I got to tell you, my bourbon is a lot more dangerous than marijuana.
Yep.
Used in the same moderation. You know, like the old joke goes, the only way you die from marijuana is if a velvet falls on your head. But why shouldn't people be able to peacefully use drugs in their own home? And what we see right now is we see longer prison sentences for drugs that people of color use. We see that they're patrolled more often. And again, alcohol prohibition didn't work and drug prohibition doesn't work. And, you know, a lot of people think, well, you know, I don't use drugs, so how does it help me? Well, you get safer streets. What about your schools? You know, when was the last time you heard of a liquor store owner going up and down the halls of the high school trying to push gin on the students? Or when was the last time you heard of a vodka addict breaking into a house to pay for a vodka habit?
Right.
And when's the last time you heard of two liquor store owners having a shootout for the best corner?
Right.
These are not drug problems. They're drug prohibition problems. And just like we have problems with Al Capone, that's what we're having right now. And we've also got people, think of how you would feel if this were 100 years ago and your neighbor was in prison for using bourbon. And that's essentially what we have. And
yeah.
It's destroying families. We've got the highest incarceration in the world.
Yeah.
And it's ridiculous.
I have a friend who's a former police officer and worked on drug interdiction, and he always introduces himself by saying, "Hi, I'm a 20-year veteran of the war on drugs, and we lost."
Yes.
So, all right, before I let you go, tell me the bat story, since the media took that way out of context. I just want to know the deal on it real quick before we let you get on the bus.
No, I did not get bit. I opened my, you know, I had to get up at the crack of dawn to fly to the bus because we wanted to get a full day of campaigning in, open up the door, my back door at like 4:30 because I wanted to see if I could find my cat and tell her goodbye before I left. And I had an encounter with a bat. We kind of scared each other and it flew into my face. And all it did was scratch me. But what a lot of people don't realize is that bats are the only animals that you can catch rabies from without a bite.
I didn't know you could catch it without a bite.
Yeah, exactly. So I had seen that on the news a couple of years ago because there was a bat loose in some stadium and they were warning people on the news, hey, if you were here and you came in contact, go seek medical help. Hmm. And so I knew I better go to the emergency room. At the time, I just thought it kind of flew into my neck, which how stereotypical is that? But it wasn't until later that I realized that it had actually scratched my chin. So even if it hadn't scratched me, that still would have been enough, just the encounter. However, the scratch made it worse. And here's the good news. They no longer give shots in your abdomen.
Oh, good.
However, they are big shots, and I've got a huge bruise on my arm from one of them. So.
Thanks for clearing that up because the media did a doozy on that one for you. I'm sure we'll hear lots more going down the road. Thank you for your time today, Dr. Joe Jorgensen. Thank you so much for being a part of the program. We thank you for answering all the questions, the good back and forth and all of that. Thanks for your time today, and have fun on the campaign trail.
Oh, really enjoyed it. You have a good day, too. Thanks.
All right. And real quick, your website is joe20.com, just so people know it's J-O, not J-O-E, joe20.com. Cool. Thank
exactly.
you so much, Dr.
Thank
Jorgensen.
You. Have a great day.
All right. Bye-bye. All right. Cool. Don't agree with everything she said. Agree with a lot of it. There's a lot of common sense in there. But you know what? Here's the way I look at it, too, I've never voted for somebody who I agreed with 100%. I have my threshold is probably going to run around 80%. We got to be 70 to 80%, but it's also going to depend on who else is in the race, right? Like for instance, with Hillary and Trump last election, maybe 60% of what Trump was saying I agreed with, maybe 10% of what Hillary was saying I agreed with. That's a no contest, right? Because those are your choices. So that's the way I look at it. It's like, all right, I'm not going to get perfect. I don't even agree with myself 100% of the time. So I'll just go with whatever comes closest. So anyway, appreciate hair popping on the program. I'll let you make your decision as to whether or not that's something that's for you. I'm not making any endorsements. I've made one endorsement in two endorsements. Sorry. In my entire career in media, I've made two endorsements. I endorsed Ryan Quarles for Ag Commissioner, and I endorsed Rand Paul for Senate. Those are the only two endorsements I've ever done in my life. I'll never do them again, and they were the only two I had done up to that point. And there's a reason why I don't do them. Look, my goal is to give you my opinion about things, to give you the facts about stories. No, I'm not a journalist. I just give you the facts as I know them, and then I give you my opinion, and I try to be honest about my agenda. But I figure you're smart enough to decide whether or not a candidate lines up with you, and nobody who's in the media telling you, I support so-and-so is going to... Dude, you don't care who I endorse. You don't care. And I don't want you to care. You know, I always I've had people come up to me before and be like, I agree with everything you say. And I'm like, I'm kind of scared of you. No, I want you to have your own mind. So, no, you don't care who I endorse. So I don't endorse. But she's an interesting lady. And I appreciated her sense of humor to tell the bat stories. The media was like, I don't remember exactly everything, but they were framing her like crazy bat lady. And she got bit by a bat. I knew there was more to that story there. So thank you for clearing it up. Listen, thanks for listening. I am Leland Conway. This is The Disruption Zone. You can download us on the Apple Podcast app. You can also download us on Google Play. We're also on iHeartRadio. Just go to iHeartRadio's app and then search The Disruption Zone. Thanks to my co-executive producer and co-host, Cameron Mills. Thanks to JP Web Design. And thanks to our buddies at Dynamics Audio Productions in Lexington, Kentucky, for their production support of this program. Thanks to all of you for listening, the thousands of downloads we're getting every week and continuing to grow. We've got some exciting guests coming up on the show this week as well. We're going to talk UFOs. Yes. That's it for me today. This is the Disruption Zone. Oh, hold on. Got to follow us on Twitter. It's at Leland Show and at Zone Disruption. And on Instagram, it's at Greatly Londo and at The Disruption Zone. Thanks. The Disruption Zone.